Greetings and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2017 Q2 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Scott Wylie, Chief Executive Officer for Atlas Financial. Thank you, Mr. Wylie. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. Atlas reported a strong second quarter highlighted by growth in book value driven by better-than-industry operating margin on higher premiums and a return on equity in the high teens resulting from our core fundamental operating results. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide details about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its 2017 second quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the risk factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2016. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be using a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. Though we may address a few slides specifically, in general, we will use this presentation as an accompaniment. Feel free to follow along as we will follow the basic structure of the document. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. For those of you following along with our presentation, we'll begin on slide three. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. In our presentation today, we'll highlight many key areas where our capabilities as a hyper-focused specialist enabled Atlas to properly evaluate risk, price business, and manage claims to deliver a fundamentally strong quarter from an underwriting perspective. Simultaneously, we maintained industry-leading expense ratios as we continue to reinvest in our business. Operationally, our dual objectives are to continuously improve through the use of technology and analytics to ensure that we optimize results in the near term based on the considerable expertise across our team and also position our business for future success as our niche and auto insurance generally continues to evolve. For those of you following along on our slide deck, as Paul mentioned, we'll begin on slide three. I'll review our growth and specialized target market in a moment, but wanted to highlight a few specific financial measures to start things off. Net income after tax was $5.5 million or $0.45 per diluted common share. This compares with $4.9 million or $0.38 in last year's second quarter. Our combined ratio was a very healthy 86.2%, which was indicative of our commitment to generating an above-average underwriting profit in our highly specialized market. We're especially pleased to report this result at a time where commercial auto insurance in general is facing well-publicized challenges. Our unique focus and business model is a critical differentiation factor in this regard. Book value per common share on June 30th, 2017 was $11.50, compared to $10.54 as of December 31st, 2016, and $11.27 as of June 30th, 2016. And importantly, we achieved an annualized return on equity of 16.2% in the second quarter of 2017, compared to 14% in the prior year. This considerably exceeded the property and casualty industry, above and beyond our goal of 500 to 1,000 basis points. Paul will provide more detail regarding these financial results later in the call. One of the core tenets at the foundation of Atlas's business model has always been prioritizing return on equity and underwriting performance over top-line growth. A year ago, we took steps we felt were appropriate as a price leader that did impact our quarterly growth rate. We undertook these activities thoughtfully, understanding that there were other factors that could impact our top line in the near term, most significantly, a reduction in the number of taxis in operation, as became obvious throughout 2016. Our expectation a year ago was that the commercial auto market would continue to harden and that the overall market size increase in public auto, driven by the increase in transportation network company-related rides, as well as positive changes in the taxi space, would ultimately result in heightened demand. It also tested price elasticity ahead of the launch of our Atlas X point-of-sale based predictive analytics tool for owner-operators and small fleets. A year later, we're benefiting from the higher premium to risk levels resulting from these actions and are again seeing growth at higher expected returns on deployed capital into the evolving market detailed on slide 4. In the first half of 2017, we saw improvements in persistency with retention levels holding at target levels while we took positive rate in the market for existing business. We're now seeing relative stability in the taxi segment and are beginning to win accounts in the emerging market of professional drivers under dispatch, either part or full-time, via transportation network companies. Throughout all of this, our paratransit market has maintained consistent and stable growth as well. Overall, new business application volumes are higher than expected, allowing us to set price at levels that are resulting in lower hit ratios but higher average premiums for those accounts identified as potentially most profitable. In total, Atlas's gross written premiums increased in the quarter by 18.6% to $57.4 million compared to $48.4 million for the prior year period. Our focus has always been to price each segment of our business to a similar expected loss ratio. As a result, relative market share by segment and geography will shift as the market dynamics change. Within our overall growth, there has been a meaningful shift in mix. On slide 5, you'll see that 3 years ago, taxi was our largest business segment, and now we have shifted as the market has evolved, with almost half of our business coming from limo and livery. Our average policy size in terms of vehicles has also come down slightly over the years, with an increasing number of owner-operators, which has always been a sweet spot for us. We believe that our value proposition resonates equally across each of our target market segments. As the niche of people moving people or things in light vehicles evolves, we will build on this dynamic by continuing to provide the tried and true value drivers in the area of service and claims, coupled with increasing the use of technology to connect with and evaluate our customers. Our goal is to create a win-win situation where our clients' insurance costs can be reduced through better driving behaviors, while at the same time, our underwriting margins can increase with less volatility. Ultimately, our goal is to help reduce the number and severity of accidents related to human-controlled vehicles as we position Atlas as a leader on the path towards more autonomous vehicles in the commercial space over the longer term. Let me take a few minutes and break down our growth by geography as summarized on slide 6. In the second quarter, New York was again our largest market, followed by California, which grew over 40%. In general, our top 10 markets are similar to what you'd imagine the top 10 public auto markets to be based on population and density. Today, we have approximately 12% market penetration and still have considerable room to grow in terms of market share. We've stated in the past that we believe Atlas can achieve an approximate 20% proportionate market share in each of the 42 states in Washington, D.C., where we actively write, without having to be price aggressive. Provided that market conditions in those areas fit our pricing standards to achieve the underwriting profits we require, we expect to continue to grow our business with expanding margin. That said, our business is shrinking in certain geographic areas where the rate need we've identified prices us out of the market. Michigan is an example. While we unfortunately believe the challenges in that state will continue in the near term, resulting in our in-force business dropping to below 1%, there are other states where business slowed earlier this year as a result of our pricing actions, where competition may follow our leadership, enabling growth to resume in the coming quarters. We're monitoring trends by segment and geography closely. Florida is an example of a state that had been challenged for many years, starting in the early 2000s. We are currently writing a small amount of business with primarily high-deductible clients who are committed to using in-vehicle technology to better manage fraud. The results of this evaluation over time will allow us to make an informed decision about potentially writing more business in this state in the future. For every premium dollar we write, we're effectively deploying 50 cents of capital. To maximize overall return on equity, we focus on optimizing the return on every dollar of capital we deploy. On slide 7, we provide the most recent industry data available from the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, which illustrates the trends in commercial auto overall. This data demonstrates that the industry is taking consistent rate increases, and even more so in the smaller account sizes, which make up the majority of Atlas's business. During the period of 2012 through 2015, commercial auto generally began to harden, consistent with other large segments of property and casualty insurance. While some thought that commercial auto would soften along with the rest of the industry in 2016, we actually saw a retrenchment driven by the industry rate need at the end of the year. In our specialty niche, we have a great deal of visibility as to what rate changes are appropriate and what other competitive dynamics may be changing in our markets. We're not seeing any large new market participant coming in as a disruptor at this time. Given the specialized nature of our model and the increasingly transactional nature of the drivers in our niche, we think there's a meaningful moat around Atlas's business supporting our ability to increase market share profitably and at rates we deem appropriate as the commercial auto segment continues to harden. We have been relatively conservative in taking credit for rate changes in the past few quarters and continue to carry our loss ratio at the midpoint of the 59% to 61% range indicated on our last call. However, we have successfully implemented average rate increases in the mid to high single digit ranges and do expect to realize the benefit of this activity over time. As shown on slide 8, our total in-force premium has grown to over $264 million at the end of the second quarter. Seasonality will have an impact in terms of written premium and our unearned premium reserves in any given quarter, although this should continue to flatten as our book becomes more diversified geographically. On the next slide, we show the significant reduction of in-force premium in Michigan, which has now become a very small portion of our overall book as compared to what it was a few years ago. As I mentioned, we're on track to see the percentage of our overall book of business in Michigan drop to below 1% this year. While Michigan claims will continue to run off over time, as of June 30, 2017, open claim inventory related to this state has been reduced by approximately 16% compared to year-end 2016, with approximately 450 pending claims. While we're certainly not the only commercial auto insurance company that evaluates and reacts to changes in market conditions, I do believe that Atlas's ability to identify such changes early based on our specialty focus, coupled with the ability and willingness to react quickly amidst changing conditions, is a meaningful relative strength. Our business has shifted considerably over the past 3 years, including market expansion and driver transitions due to the evolution of transportation network companies, coupled with a change in competitive dynamic as the commercial auto segment hardened, began to soften, and then hardened again. Our team has demonstrated that while we will not arbitrarily chase business, we will thoughtfully leverage our competitive strengths to ensure profitable growth over the long term and in the face of changing dynamics. Now, I'll once again turn it over to Paul to highlight a few key items related to our capital allocation and for a more detailed review of our financial results. I will then return for concluding remarks prior to Q&A.
Thanks, Scott. As always, I encourage each of you to review our filings, our slideshow presentation, and to reach out to Scott or myself with any questions. We recognize the importance of being a good steward of capital and always seek the most efficient means of managing our capital based on growth opportunities and changing market dynamics. As shown on slide 10, at June 30th, 2017, Our operating leverage, as measured by net written premium to combined statutory surplus, was roughly 1.8 to 1, as indicated in the top chart. Managing our statutory operating leverage is important from both regulatory and rating agency perspectives. At the same time, we are focused on optimizing operating leverage on the GAAP side. Continued growth is the primary reason that our statutory operating leverage is relatively higher than the indicated GAAP leverage. This is the result of the fact that statutory accounting requires acquisition costs be expensed against written premium, while GAAP treatment requires that these expenses be deferred and amortized over the earning cycle of the underlying policies. Consequently, these expenses reduce statutory surplus in the short term, resulting in higher operating leverage against the same premium base. During the first quarter of 2017, we renewed our reinsurance programs for an additional 2 years with similar terms to those in force at the end of 2016. In the second quarter, we held our quota share reinsurance cession rates constant at 5% and 25% of subject written premium for the ASI pool companies and Global Liberty, respectively. These reinsurance arrangements provide Atlas with considerable flexibility and an attractive, effective cost of capital. As announced earlier this year, we successfully closed a $25 million public bond offering of senior unsecured notes due in 2022 in the quarter. These notes are publicly traded under the ticker AFHBL. We feel this transaction extended the tenure of our debt in a way that better matches the growth opportunities we see ahead, as well as fixing our interest rate at 6.625% at a time where many feel interest rates may begin to rise. In July, we made our first interest payment following this issuance. We used some of the net proceeds from the offering and cash on hand to repay the $19.4 million in outstanding indebtedness under our secured credit facility, which was terminated in April. We now have additional capital available for repurchases of common stock, supporting organic growth, potential acquisitions, as well as for general corporate purposes. In the second quarter, we did implement a formal 10b5-1 program as part of the previously announced share repurchase program of up to 650,000 shares of common stock authorized by our board of directors. This plan is with a well-respected broker-dealer that will ensure our company can execute on opportunistic share purchases when justified. We've provided a purchase price algorithm to the broker-dealer, which is based on a relative cost and expected return on capital deployed in our business. It should not be interpreted as a perceived valuation of our stock at any given time. While we did believe our stock was undervalued in the quarter based on regression of our ROE and growth relative to peers, we did not purchase any shares as the capital allocation-based metrics I described were not triggered. There were points in time earlier in the year where our stock price would have triggered repurchases. However, due to the blackout restrictions, the company was unable to implement the plan until after the first quarter's earnings release. This program remains in place. Our authorized broker-dealer can now purchase through blackout utilizing the algorithm that was put in place outside of the blackout period and is subject to SEC rules. Any shares repurchased under this arrangement will be funded using the company's working capital. We are committed to self-funding organic growth. As we've communicated in the past, we intend to ensure that the various tools we've implemented to manage operating leverage are consistently evaluated to maximize ROE over time. Moving to the financial results section, starting on page 13, as Scott mentioned, it was an excellent quarter for Atlas. Gross premiums written increased 18.6% to $57.4 million, and at June 30, 2017, in-force premium was at its highest point in the company's history. Underwriting profit, which is income produced prior to investment income, increased 17.2% to $7.5 million from $6.4 million in the prior year period. net income was $5.5 million, or $0.45 per common share diluted in the second quarter of 2017, compared to $4.9 million, or $0.38 per common share diluted, representing a $0.07 or 18.4% increase from the second quarter of 2016. Annualized return on equity was 16.2% compared to 14% in the prior year quarter. Slide 14 breaks out the key components of our combined ratio after accounting for the effects of the changes in reinsurance treaties that Scott referred to earlier. The loss ratio related to net claims incurred for the three-month period ended June 30, 2017, was 60.1% compared to 58.8% for the three-month period ended June 30, 2016. The loss ratio increased slightly from the prior year period, primarily due to the company's ongoing review of underwriting profitability by state and product, but was down quarter over quarter when compared to the 60.5% as reported in the first quarter of 2017. The underwriting expense ratio for the three-month period ended June 30, 2017, was 26.1% compared to 26% for the three-month period ended June 30, 2016. Atlas's underwriting expense ratio, excluding the impact of share-based compensation expenses and expenses related to stock purchase agreements, was 25.6% and continues to fall within the aspirational target range of 24.5% to 26.5% established early in Atlas's existence. Going forward, our expectation is that continuous improvement initiatives will enable us to modestly improve this ratio on an annualized basis, while at the same time we reinvest appropriately in the technology and analytics initiatives that Scott described. On a year-to-date basis, the amount of this type of reinvestment made up approximately half of 1% of our overall expense ratio. Atlas's combined ratio for the three-month period ended June 30, 2017, was 86.2% compared to 84.8% for the three-month period ended June 30, 2016. The primary basis for the difference was the company's decision to strengthen reserves and loss ratio at the end of 2016. Other than a de minimis amount of development related to assigned risk and runoff businesses, there was no prior year reserve strengthening or release in the second quarter of 2017. Slide 15 provides both annual and quarterly trend information in terms of our combined ratio and its components. As we indicated on prior calls, we feel that year-over-year comparisons are more useful than quarter-over-quarter given the nature of our business. As illustrated, we continue to improve operating efficiency on a year-over-year basis as measured by our expense ratio. Slides 16 and 17 provide an overview of our overall balance sheet strength and our cash and invested assets. Net investment income, net of investment expenses, increased by 14% to $1.3 million for the 3 months ended June 30, 2017, compared to $1.1 million in the prior year period. The increase in investment income from the prior year period is the result of higher returns on our other than fixed income investments, partially offset by lower interest income on our fixed income securities portfolio. The gross annualized yield on our fixed income portfolio was 2.3% and 2% for the three-month periods ended June 30, 2017 and 16, respectively. Book value per common share on June 30, 2017 was $11.50 compared to $10.54 as of December 31, 2016 and $11.27 as of June 30, 2016. A detailed summary of the changes to book value can be found on slide 18. With that, let me turn the call back to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks again, Paul. Before we open it up to questions, I would like to discuss how Atlas is utilizing technology and analytics from a longer-term comparative advantage standpoint. At our annual Investor Day in May, we welcomed several industry experts, distribution partners, and customers that were present to explain the impact that advanced telematics and machine learning-based predictive analytics is having on our industry. We also shared real-life examples of how our commitment to these initiatives is positively impacting Atlas's internal operating efficiency, distribution channel engagement, and customer experience. On slide 20, you see a comparison of our sequential pricing changes relative to ISO, which serves as a proxy for the price change implemented by the majority of our competitors. As we've touched on before, Atlas began the integration of analytics tools directly into our point-of-sale system in the second half of last year. Our modeling, which was initially built based on deep existing data sets, is now being refreshed over time based on incremental telematic and other data that we're accumulating. This implementation is designed to further expand our underwriting margin relative to risk. Incrementally, we feel that the market trends suggest additional industry-wide rate increases in commercial auto in the next year and potentially beyond. We believe that the combination of our modeling and the market cycle will enable us to further differentiate from the industry in a positive way. It will enable us to optimize growth in hard market conditions and profitably hold more market share in the face of increased competition in future soft markets. Slide 21 highlights the persistency and hit ratio dynamics I referenced earlier. Our goal is to continue to maintain renewals at current target levels and also continue to focus on return on deployed capital levels for new business in the face of increased demand, which is at the highest levels we've seen since the inception of Atlas. Slide 22 provides an overview of both premium and policy count distribution based on modeled underwriting scores. As you can see, while overall premiums follow a relatively bell-shaped distribution, the bias of policies written is towards the right, which are the score bands expected to generate the best underwriting profit. We are generally competing against companies using a commodity approach following standard ISO pricing. The relativity identified by our models enables us to offer discounts to those accounts whose scores indicate that they are less risky, while debiting those accounts that are more risky. The net effect is that we will win more of the better accounts at rate levels that will increase overall underwriting margin, as seen by the higher hit ratios on the right side of the chart, while writing fewer potentially less profitable accounts. Now, on its own, that is valuable. However, we believe that when you tie in Atlas's strong value proposition, which has always enabled us to charge a relatively higher price as compared to less specialized competition, overall return on equity potential is even greater. Advanced telematics will continue to refine our capabilities as well. Over the second half of 2017, Atlas's principal focus is to continue to profitably grow market share while we simultaneously focus on the incremental integration of technology and analytics to optimize the entire ecosystem among our company, our agents, and our insureds. Our strategic objective is to ensure that as the industry trends evolve, Atlas is best positioned to leverage our heritage and amplify our capabilities to ensure that we're able to continue to lead the industry as measured by returns on equity exceeding our peers by at least 500 to 1,000 basis points. When coupled with our repository of data and claims procedures, we expect this approach to increase our relevance to the market and reduce volatility and loss ratios over time while simultaneously identifying potential segments or markets where asymmetric returns on deployed capital can be achieved. We expect this to allow Atlas to grow in the right markets, consistent with our disciplined commitment to better-than-industry bottom-line results. During the second quarter, we reported an annualized ROE in the high teens at 16.2% annualized and feel well-positioned to improve based on the current market environment. At this time, let's open it up for questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Paul Newsome with Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. Thanks for the call. Looks like a nice quarter. Could you give us a little bit more thoughts on the competitive environment? Broadly, we're obviously hearing price increases in commercial auto more broadly, but I don't want to lead the question, but it does seem like we've seen some some minor changes in the overall commercial market, and I just wanted to see if you've seen any sort of changes in the last quarter or so.
Yeah, I think I'd respond to that kind of in three different areas. The first being our specific competitive environment in our current niche. You know, we are not seeing any signs of significant new entrants. The managing general agents, who in softer markets tended to be price aggressive, have really limited access to underwriting partners. And given the climate in commercial auto, we don't think there's any significant reason to believe that during the next year or potentially further, they're going to have any more success. And so that's a strong positive because in the absence of MGAs being price aggressive in our niche, we're tending to compete with generally local, smaller, privately owned companies who will tend to follow price leadership, which is what we ultimately saw in the second half of 16 and continue to see this year. And so that's a really encouraging thing in terms of our traditional business and our current niche. The second thing that we're seeing more broadly in commercial auto is that larger generalists do appear to be re-underwriting their books of business, which often means that they will move away from smaller, more specialized segments. And so we're optimistic that that could provide us with an opportunity to pursue some horizontal expansion, which has always been a part of our strategy and something that we generally indicated we thought we would pursue in softer markets, because that tends to be when those opportunities arise. But given the sort of interesting dynamic where most of property casualty is softening, but commercial auto more broadly is hardening, and these books are being re-underwritten, it could free up some opportunities there. So that's the second thing I'd say we're seeing. And the third thing is, really for the first time, at least in my 25 years of experience in this industry, I think we're seeing some larger generalist potentially decoupling commercial auto from business auto policies. In other words, you know, historically, because commercial auto for 15 or 20 years had outperformed property casualty up until a few years ago, large generalists typically required that a small business owner who wanted to buy commercial auto, for example, a plumber who wanted to insure their plumber's van, had to bundle that with their business auto policy, or their business package policy, rather, or at least provided them with pretty significant incentives to do so. And we are starting to see that certain larger underwriters are actually beginning to quote the commercial auto monoline because they're looking for pretty significant rate increases and are willing to continue writing the business package policy without it. So it's pretty early in terms of starting to see that happen, but if it does, you know, it could again change the dynamic where there could be a relatively large universe of monoline commercial auto business that we could potentially explore as a specialist in that segment. But again, kind of tying it back to our business today, given that trend, it seems unlikely that one of those large generalists is going to look to a highly transactional, highly specialized, high-frequency niche like ours as a place to deploy capital while they're you know, in the process of re-underwriting and sort of decoupling their books of business.
That's great. You know, now that dust has settled on Michigan, any lessons learned that we can think about there?
Well, I think the key is, you know, we always want to make sure that we are watching all states where we're active in and identifying changes as quickly as we possibly can. You know, the implementation of the machine learning-based predictive analytics and claims in particular, which we launched in the second half of last year, you know, establishes a protocol or a foundation that will allow us to identify those kind of things faster than we did in the past. And so, you know, if we could have had those tools in place 3 years ago, I think we would have identified some of the things we saw in 2016 a little bit earlier. But, you know, again, that's a scenario where, you know, going forward, you know, we're going to use that as a learning experience and make sure that we can fully leverage those tools. Other than that, you know, it is a reminder that markets change and they can change quickly. And so it just reminds us that we need to be very diligent to keep an eye on those things. And, you know, we're going to see some states improve in the short run, and we're going to see others get worse. You know, I had highlighted in the formal comments, you know, we're looking at Florida, which has been a very challenged state, and you know, very cautiously testing the waters to see whether or not the market's improving. There's some reasons to think it might have been. On the other hand, there's some other states where, based on the current competitive environment, we're writing less business, not because there's something wrong with the state in terms of the environmental type things we saw in Michigan, but because the competitive environment, you know, has just not hardened as much as other states. And so in those circumstances, you know, we're again allowing the business to potentially shrink in the short run with the idea that we want to show price leadership, and ultimately we think competitors will follow. So, you know, I think the key takeaway just is, you know, we need to continue to be very diligent about watching changes in every state, good or bad, and reacting very quickly. And really, you know, remind ourselves and all of our stakeholders that that's why it's so important for us not to tether our targets to a top-line goal, because in the end, we've always felt that, you know, we need to let the top line fluctuate with a focused commitment on the bottom line, you know, underwriting margin and ultimately return on equity.
Great. Thanks. Nice quarter.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for the questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Frederick Shepard with Capital Returns Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my question.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Are there any other TNC initiatives in the pipeline, like maybe similar to Mobileye in the first quarter, and how should we think about modeling that either in the back half of the year or in the out years?
So we have telematics-based initiatives underway primarily with three providers, you know, all of which have been press released by those providers, Mobileye being one of them. And so, you know, each of those initiatives we believe will help us target opportunities to write more profitable business for different reasons. You know, we talked a lot at our Investor Day about the fact that we don't think there's a single best telematics solution for everybody. But we do believe that, you know, we can identify problems to be solved or opportunities to be pursued in different segments of our business for different reasons. And our goal has been to find the best solution for each of those problems. And so we do feel very comfortable that we are going to continue to be able to benefit from those initiatives. I would not want to encourage anybody to expect us to write big chunks of business in a given quarter, like we did in the first quarter, although we do have a number of those potential prospects in the pipeline. And so, you know, I think the important thing is that we are very focused on pursuing those initiatives. We feel very good about the telematic and technology partners that we've identified, and absolutely think that over time, those are going to be critical to the ongoing success of our business, and they will be critical differentiators between, you know, our company as a specialist and more broader sort of focused generalists. But, you know, as with any kind of initiative that's large scale and relatively long term, you know, there may be certain successes in a given quarter, there may not be. And so I want to discourage anyone from expecting kind of the big elephant hunting to result in, you know, big chunks of premium in any given quarter. But like I said, over time, we absolutely believe that we're going to benefit significantly, you know, both in terms of expanding margin by leveraging those initiatives and the telematic data and other in-vehicle technology-based information that we're gathering now. And, you know, so that'll help us across our whole book. And then it also will position us well to capture some of those large accounts, particularly some of the big operators who are now providing vehicles to TNC drivers, because we can really demonstrate that we can do things that other insurers aren't able to or aren't willing to.
Right. And so it sounds like you're pretty happy with the data that you're collecting from these initiatives in terms of predictive modeling usage. I guess, one, do you think it's sufficiently credible for predictive purposes? And two, are you supplementing the data you're collecting with other sources?
So yes and yes. So, you know, we have only picked companies that we vetted and really do believe that the data that they're collecting is credible. We've looked at dozens of potential alternatives and, you know, have selected only those that we're highly confident in, you know, both in terms of the quality of their technology and its relevance, coupled with ultimately, you know, price point and the other things that are going to be critical to make a good idea, a good business model. You know, we want to be partnered with companies that have the capability to be very successful in their own right over the long run. also we believe we can help them become successful. And that's really where the second part of your question comes into play. So the telematic data itself is often very helpful to evaluate driver behavior, potentially even affect driver behavior, capture video, which can be critical in terms of resolution of claims or identification of meritorious versus non-meritorious claims. But the one thing that the technology companies themselves can't do is to determine impact on the combination of loss frequency and loss severity to really quantify the return on investment that their technology can produce. And so that's where our partnership with them is really valuable, because they can help us better understand how the technology can be used. We can help guide them in terms of things that they could do to optimize its benefit to us. And then we can ultimately work together to really validate what that return on investment is, because that's going to be at the heart of, you know, what creates consumer demand and also our ability to expand margins, while at the same time giving people a premium incentive to want to move their business to us and introduce the technology. So I think the key really is the combination of both having really credible downstream data and really quality technology and analytics, and then ultimately marrying that up with the data that we have, which is very difficult to accumulate, and really has been accumulated over decades by the insurance subsidiaries that Atlas has acquired. So it's really the combination of both things that are going to be critical to future success.
Great. And just on the growth that you noted in California, is there anything in particular that's driving that?
We've mentioned before, California was an important large state and one where we had relatively low market penetration. So while nationwide our market penetration is about 12%, it's probably about half that in California. And so our ability to capture market share in California is, to a great extent, you know, relatively, I won't say easier, but, it is certainly easier to go from 5% to 10% market share than it is to go from 10 to 15 and so on. So a lot of it, I think, is just relative market share, you know, and it's a state that, you know, we believe is currently very favorable, and it's one that we've been very active in pursuing.
Great. And then just real quick, going back to Michigan, what is the reserve level there, and is it running off within expectation? And then, I guess, could you maybe provide some detail around how many claims are still open? Maybe what's the new trend, the trend of new claims coming through the door? And then I know you mentioned Florida as a state that you're watching, but are there any other states in particular that we should be focused on?
Yeah, so we don't typically provide specific reserve levels on a state-by-state basis in dollar terms, but, you know, I can tell you that the reserve levels that we established at year-end 16 for Michigan do appear to be holding up consistent with the expectations we had. Paid severity in Michigan seems to be flattening out, again, just based on the sort of early information we have in the first half of this year. As I touched on, you know, inventory claim count has dropped 16% since the end of 2016. We currently have about 450 claims open for Michigan in terms of the third-party bodily injury and PIP claims. And, you know, we are seeing that inventory declining. So claim closure rate is definitely exceeding the rate of inbound claims, you know, which is slowing dramatically. Last year, I think we saw the biggest amount of claim settlement that we've seen historically and probably will see based on the fact that there was a three-year statute related to Michigan PIP, and a lot of the exposure in that state for us was created in 2013 in terms of claims made against 2012 and 2013 accident years. And so now that three-year statute has run on the years where we had the biggest in-force exposure, that is also gonna result in fewer claims coming in, especially, bigger, older claims. So, we do have a team of people who are focused specifically on running off those older Michigan claims, and we feel confident that they're doing the right job.
Great.
In terms of Florida, like I said, it's an environment that had been challenged, but it is a large market, and it's one that, has the potential to be profitable, especially at current rates. But before we just jump in, we want to test the waters and, partnered with a couple of accounts that want to have high deductibles, are committed to using in-vehicle technology to, make sure that we have the tools necessary to fight the kind of fraud that we'd be concerned about in Florida. So far those accounts have actually been running very profitably. But, as I said, we're really looking at that as a test, And so, you know, do not expect us to write a lot of business there in the near term. But I just wanted to highlight the fact that, you know, we are always looking at every state in terms of potential growth and or shrinking based on the condition of the market and the condition of the state, you know, for other reasons. But there are no other states that I would highlight as having state-level trend that we're either concerned about or we think is changing dramatically. There are a couple of states that you'll notice in our materials where the written premium in the quarter shrank. Generally, those Louisiana might be an example of that. You know, in that state, there were a couple of large accounts that we raised rates on because of some account-specific loss trend issues, and a local non-standard company was price aggressive and took that business at lower rates than we were willing to write. And so that's really the explanation there. It doesn't have to do with a state-specific trend. It's really more a competitive environment situation. And, you know, as we've always said, we are not going to chase business just because a competitor is either being price aggressive or naive in terms of the pricing. So those are a couple examples, but, you know, again, nothing that I would highlight as being sort of, you know, consistent with the kind of dramatic issues we saw in Michigan last year.
No, that's great. Thank you. I'll hop back in queue.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Brian Hollenden with Sidoti. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, and congrats on the strong quarter.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Within your livery and limo business, how much of those premiums are related to vehicles used for prearranged rides, and how much are related to premiums from full-time TNC drivers?
So the breakdown is difficult to quantify because many of the livery operators do both. You know, many of the professionally licensed or commercially licensed professional drivers, because they are able to be owner-operators in a traditional sense, will have their own group of customers and will also get rides from transportation network companies like Uber under the Uber Black and Uber SUV service to fill extra time. Or in some cases, you know, it enables a commercially licensed professional driver to more quickly become an owner-operator because they're able to initially rely on transportation network companies to provide enough rides to cover their operating costs. And then hope to cultivate their own direct customers where they'll make more money because they don't have to pay the transportation network companies over time. And so we're really seeing both of those things happening within our book of business. In terms of driver transition, you know, last year we saw a pretty significant amount of drivers leaving our taxi policies and showing up 6 or 12 months later on a livery policy. We have seen that transition slow down to about half the rate we saw last year. So again, that's consistent with the view that, you know, that sort of driver transition from taxi to livery is stabilizing. But we are continuing to see the livery space grow based on the incremental rides that are coming into the market. And the fact that there are also drivers who were not traditional taxi drivers or livery drivers who are becoming drivers, you know, trying to drive for the UberX service, for example, deciding they like it and ultimately, you know, getting commercially licensed so that they can make more money driving for Uber Black or SUV where they then need to buy commercial auto insurance. And of course, in New York, you know, everybody driving for a transportation network company has to buy commercial auto insurance. The most recent statistic I heard in New York is that there are about 600 new drivers a week coming into the transportation network segment. I've not seen a statistic on how long they stay or how quickly they leave, but there is definitely still net growth in terms of overall rides, you know, in the New York market as well. So, you know, hopefully that gives you some context. But again, it's difficult to quantify the prearranged versus transportation network dispatch rides because, you know, most of these operators are actually doing both, at least the commercially licensed ones.
Yeah, appreciate that color. Can you talk about what drove the, you know, sort of that 50% or so increase in paratransit year over year? And assuming that market stays hard, what does vehicle count growth look like there moving forward on an annualized basis?
Sure, and I'll highlight just for you know the benefit of all the callers. You know, if you look at our Q2 results in the quarter itself, about 12.5% of our written premium was taxi, 39.8% was limo, and 45.9% was paratransit. There's a small amount of assigned risk and sort of plain vanilla business auto in there, less than 2% making up the difference. On a year-to-date basis, that business mix, which is probably more consistent with what we'd expect on a full year, was about 17.1% taxi, 46.3% limo, and 35.4% paratransit. So the relative growth on a quarter-over-quarter basis for limo was about 17.3%, and para was 51.4%. So those were obviously our growth drivers. For paratransit, you know, I would not expect that growth rate on an annualized basis. There was some impact, I think, of seasonality or an absence of seasonality on livery and taxi in the quarter. But, you know, we consistently over the last year or two saw paratransit growing between 30 and 40%. We do see that growth trend in that line of business continuing. It's being driven really by expanding market size, so aging population, longer lifespan, really just increased overall demand for paratransit rides, coupled with the fact that we are also capturing market share in that segment. You know, it is a highly specialized segment. It requires very specific treatment given the nature of the passengers and the type of operations. You know, it's an area that we have heavily invested in making sure that we have a great deal of expertise. I think we've talked in prior calls about our doing things like arranging a council made up of more than 50 lawyers who work with us and focus on that segment across, you know, the nationwide distribution platform we have, really making sure that we've got best-in-class ability to operate, you know, sort of evaluate and manage claims is critical there. You know, it's really the growth of that overall segment and then our ability to compete effectively in a space where there are very few competitors because of that specialty nature of the business. And so while we really see that competitive moat impacting all of our segments, you know, it's probably strongest in the paratransit segment because of the particular unique nature of that business.
Thanks for the update.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bob Farnam with Benning and Scattergood. Please proceed with your question.
Hi there. Thanks, and good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
I think maybe continuing on that theme with the change in the business mix, is there much of a change in the risk profile? Like, does the livery and limbo claims have different frequency severity trends relative to the taxi, which is declining? I'm just trying to figure out what change in the risk profile might look like with that mix.
Sure. So the first thing I'd comment on is, you know, and we touched on this earlier in the call, is, you know, we do price all of our segments in each state to the same expected loss ratio. And so when we're doing our actuarial work and evaluating where our average rate should be, we are looking for the same return on deployed capital effectively across all the segments. So that is the goal. To do that, you then have to ultimately be able to predict expected loss cost. And loss cost is a combination of frequency of claims times severity of claims. So when you start to look across the segments, to your question, there are differences in both. You know, taxi tended to have the highest frequency but lowest severity. Limo and livery tended to be in the middle, both in terms of frequency and severity. And paratransit tends to have much lower severity but can have higher, or I'm sorry, much lower frequency but can have much higher severity. And so in terms of the mix shift, you would expect that a transition away from taxi towards livery would result in slightly lower frequency, but also potentially higher severity. But understand that, you know, all of that is built into our pricing. And so the business we're writing, we are expecting to write to the same target loss ratio, despite the fact that you're going to see changes in frequency and severity. So it's definitely something we're watching very closely. The fact that we are now using the machine learning-based predictive analytics in our pricing models, as well as our claims reserving process, you know, is going to help us monitor those changes in severity and frequencies much more closely than we could have without those tools. And, you know, it's definitely something that will be part of our regular pricing analysis as well. But it's a great question, and those are definitely, you know, changes that we have to keep an eye on and make sure we're pricing to.
Right. Okay. Thanks. And I guess a question on, I don't hate to harp on these individual state stuff because I know some are up, some are down, but New Jersey, you've been growing a lot in New Jersey over the last year. Just trying to get some background as to what gives you the comfort to be able to expand as quickly as you have in that state.
Well, and some of it, you know, there I think is, you know, Global Liberty obviously was predominantly a New York writer, but New Jersey is right next door, and it's a market they're very, very knowledgeable about. So I think bringing them into our organization in 2015, you know, helped to give us some intellectual capital that gave us, you know, incremental confidence there. And just in general, you know, it's a state that we've been actively writing in for a number of years. And, you know, a lot of it is, you know, when the market becomes harder, our growth rate in a state where we've typically been priced higher than many of our competitors is going to result in growth, not because we're pushing for growth, but because the market is just rising to the rate levels that we deem to be necessary to generate the kind of returns we're looking for. So I think in that state, it's really a combination of having that additional expertise, which does give us the comfort, but then also the fact that I think competitively, it's a market environment that's sort of rising to follow what, you know, had been price leadership on our part in the past and, you know, may have limited the amount of business we could write because there were some competitors who were willing to write cheaper, you know, and have increased their rates in the past year or so.
And this, and this, I, so it sounds like this is predominantly northern New Jersey rather than southern, like by Philly. It's more a New York area.
I think that is where a lot of the business is. You know, I don't offhand have a specific percentage of business by, you know, municipal area. But, you know, generally speaking, all of our business is going to be concentrated around municipalities, and just because that's where the population density is. But, you know, a lot of it is going to be related to you know, the areas of New Jersey that are effectively providing transportation in and out of New York.
Great. Thanks for the answers. Thanks.
Question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bill Deslam with Titan Capital Management. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. That last question was a good segue to one I would like to explore. And it's, I'm wondering if you have any states where you see actual indications that competitors are following your price leadership rather than the theoretical that eventually they should. And I think you just mentioned that New Jersey would certainly fit that example. Are you seeing that in other states, or just that's a rational thought process that will happen?
Well, I think we're seeing it in most states, really, given that in the first half of last year, you know, we did raise average rates significantly. You know, I think it's slide 20 in the deck. We show the sequential rate changes we've made relative to ISO. Now, those are nationwide, of course, and they vary by state. But, you know, effectively, you know, you see that we raised rates up into the double-digit range, 10 to 15%. In the first half of the year, you know, it did cause us to be less competitive from a pricing perspective. You know, we saw our premium volumes drop. We then backed off some of those. We never took rate back down. We just paused with incremental rate increase in the second half of the year. And then, as you can see, in the first half of this year, we are again, you know, raising rates, but continuing to have strong retention ratios on our existing business and, you know, hit ratios that we think are appropriate in terms of, you know, not quite at the targets that we ultimately like, but appropriate based on our expectation for optimizing return on deployed capital for new business. So, you know, I think in every state where we're growing, you know, we have been raising rates, and the fact that we're growing does suggest that competitors are actually following. So, you know, our product development team do monitor competitors, rate filings, you know, all that information is public. And so we do watch the competitive environment state by state, and, you know, they are evaluating that as part of their decision-making process. And so I think I'd suggest that in most states, our local competitors are following price leadership. New York is probably an exception to that, where there are local competitors there who, particularly for taxi business, have been pretty, you know, price aggressive with one another, which is why we're not writing really any first-dollar taxi business in New York right now. But we are seeing that in the limo and livery space, we can differentiate, particularly leveraging, you know, some of the TNC-related initiatives that we've talked in detail about before. So, you know, generally speaking, like I said, I think we're seeing we are seeing the theoretical potential, you know, for competitors to follow price leadership that we've talked to, you know, turn into a reality in the form of the 18 to 20% sort of organic growth that we've seen in the first half of this year.
Thank you. And then one additional question. Are there any states where you are seeing new laws that affect the transportation network companies and are requiring those drivers to have insurance that previously requirements were not there?
We have not seen any municipalities outside of New York mandate that all transportation network drivers buy commercial auto insurance. You know, we continue to believe that over time that will change, but I wouldn't want to put a date around that because it's difficult to know what legislatures and local municipalities, you know, will ultimately decide to do. It does seem to be on their radar. You know, most states ultimately sort of adopted, you know, what's being described as the compromise legislation, where the Property Casualty Insurers Association and transportation network companies sort of agreed on, you know, a compromise which does not require that the non-professionally or non-commercially licensed drivers buy commercial auto insurance. However, most states have also deferred to municipalities who have historically regulated the taxi and limo industries to be able to provide local requirements should they choose to. So the municipalities have the ability to make those decisions. Whether they will do that and how quickly is difficult to know. But I think we continue to believe that for the same reasons those requirements exist today for the traditional operators, they will ultimately be implemented on the transportation network side. But in the meantime, you know, we are focusing on the commercial opportunities to provide insurance either to those operators that are required to because of the type of category they drive for, you know, like the Uber Black and Uber SUV, or even part-time drivers who just recognize that there is limited coverage or maybe even no coverage for them at certain points in the process. And you know, should buy the insurance for commercial reasons or personal reasons, whether or not they're being required to by law. And so, you know, we are going to continue to pursue that avenue and then be well positioned when and if there's a regulatory change that mandates it.
Great. Thank you, Scott, and a nice quarter.
Great. Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Matt Carletti with JMP Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, thanks. Good morning. Scott, just had a quick one. Wanted to circle back on Michigan and maybe a little more qualitative, just, you know, versus kind of your expectations at year end, you know, fast forward 6 months to where we are today. I think it's safe to say, you know, things aren't worse than you expected because we haven't seen anything adverse. But whether it's claim counts or just the underlying loss trends, are they kind of in line with what you had hoped for, or are they better, but because things are still so green, you know, you're not going to reflect that in the numbers yet. You're just going to kind of wait and see.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the latter where, you know, 6 months, while it's encouraging that we are not seeing anything that's different than we expected, which is a good fact, I think it would be premature for us to do something positive as a result of that. So we are encouraged based on what we're seeing. You know, when we look at average settlements amounts in all the different severity bands. So, you know, claims that are between zero and 25,000, between 25 and 50 and greater than 50. You know, in 17, we are seeing paid severities go down in all three segments by a little bit. And so, again, it's encouraging because, you know, the actuarial analysis we did at year end, you know, the assumptions we made was that, you know, we did not build any optimistic assumption that it would go down. So, again, it is encouraging, but it's really too early, I think, to come to any conclusion on that. Obviously, if we saw something negative, we might have been more proactive in doing something about that. But you know, so other than being encouraged by the limited amount of additional information we have, you know, I probably wouldn't go beyond that in terms of coming to any conclusions about Michigan.
Okay, great. Thanks for all the answers this morning, and congrats on a nice quarter.
Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Our final question is a follow-up from Frederick Shepard with Capital Returns Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys, just a couple quick follow-ups. Q1 and Q3 are heavy tax renewals. What are you seeing thus far with respect to those?
So for Q3, you know, we are not giving any specific guidance, you know, in terms of renewals. You know, we've never really done that. And so it's, you know, one, it is a matter of course. You know, we do not want to orient people around top line. But you know, it is a pretty active quarter. You know, the biggest taxi-related renewal in the quarter is our excess taxi program, and so that's the program in New York for people who own 50 or more medallions who want to retain a significant amount of the loss retention, where we're to a great extent acting as a TPA. You know, that program has been very stable in terms of its participants, and so, you know, we do expect that to renew. I'm comfortable sharing that, although, you know, we have not gone through the renewal process yet, to be clear. And other than that, you know, I wouldn't speculate on you know, what we're going to see in terms of premium volume for the third quarter. But, you know, again, our focus is going to be making sure that we're pricing everything we write in all segments at levels that are going to optimize the return on the capital deployed in support of that. But, you know, again, no reason to think that we're going to see a meaningful deviation from kind of the underlying organic growth that we've seen in the first half of the year. But, you know, want to be very clear, that should not be interpreted as a top-line target in any respect.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's all I had.
Okay,
great. Thanks for the additional question.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the call back over to management for any closing remarks.
Great. Thank you very much, Michelle, and thank you, everyone. We are presenting at a few investor conferences in the coming months and look forward to seeing some of you there and certainly speaking with all of you again in November after our third quarter financial results.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.